Hi there and welcome along to this Monday podcast. I'm Maddie Playle, and as usual we're going to take a look back upon this week's talking points and the big races from the weekend. I'm joined by a great team today. We've got Keith Melrose, Racing Post betting editor. We've got James Hill, and we've always got the standing dish, Paul Binfield, with us. So let's start off then with jockeys. Jockeys have been a really key feature of this last weekend. And Jim Crowley, well, he reached his 2,000th winner aboard Modmin in the 1 mile novice at Goodwood on Sunday. Excellent achievement, and it represents sort of a lot of the jockeys going from jumps to flat. I mean, Graham Lee did it. Timmy Murphy, I think, rode quite a bit on the flat, didn't he, at one stage? And a lot of other jockeys have took the route, and it's been a really successful one for Jim. Obviously, he's having a season of all seasons this year. He's got such firepower with the Hamdan Al-Maktoum retainership. Keith, let's start with you. Do you think, as a jump jockey and having that experience, do you think that makes him a better flat jockey in ways that people who have always been flat jockeys might necessarily not be?
I don't know about that, to be honest. I mean, as far as I'm aware, the reason all these jump boys go to the flat is for the longevity, which I think shows a bit of enterprise to do that. You know, and Crowley did it early. You know, Murphy and Lee did it. They'd got as high as they were ever going to get as jump jockeys and made the switch relatively sort of late in their careers, whereas he made the change nice and early. I think he knew his connections, the opportunities were greater on the flat. Just showed a bit of nous, really. And has been
PJ McDonald's in a similar situation, wasn't he?
Who's that? Sorry, PJ?
PJ, yeah.
Yeah, he was, you're right. He's a very similar sort of idea that, you know, they moved to an early enough stage in their careers to really make the most of the longevity instead of, you know, trying to just get another 10 years on at the end. And, you know, for the numbers that Crowley's thrown up shows that he's really been rewarded for that, for what was a, you know, we all wonder what decisions we make in our life are going to be pivotal ones. And I think the one that he's made there has turned out to be an absolute stormer.
Mm, definitely. And what a year he's having. I mean, Batash has won in many Group 1s and he's got some really exciting juveniles to look forward to later in the year as well. Jimmy, I mean, Jim as a rider, what are his strengths? I think he was speaking on TV about how these days he just doesn't panic and he can be a lot more laid back. That generally comes with a bit of experience, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, he's always put his experience to good use. I mean, he's a very cool customer, Jim. Always has his horses in the right sort of area in a race. And, you know, very cool under pressure, very tidy rider under pressure. I mean, he's close to the full package now, really. He's you kind of almost forget that he was quite a decent jump jockey. And what he's done since is pretty amazing. He's become a champion jockey, 2,000 winners now. And his association with Sheikh Hamdan is proving to be really fruitful. They're having an amazing season. It just seems to be getting better and better.
Mm. And I think one thing that maybe we don't touch on with these big retainerships is that's a lot of pressure and a lot of knowledge. He's got to understand all the intricacies of each horse that he's riding and new ones coming along all the time. So that's a good deal of knowledge he's got to have about Hamdan's whole string, more or less. So he certainly does well in that role, as we've been saying. Binners, I mean, punters have absolutely loved backing Jim Crowley this season. I can't imagine a year he's had that's been any better.
No, good afternoon, Maddie. Yeah, no, he's been sensational. And I think a little bit unlike Graham Lee and Timmy Murphy, he was a very good jumps jockey, but more of a journeyman, whereas they both had big retainers at stages and... Certainly, Murphy was riding in the David Johnson colours for Martin Pipe at one stage, and Jim Crowley when he won a Grade 3 hurdle at Sandown in 2006 on Ngaro, who would have thought that he'd do all this and go on and be such a brilliant performer on the flat? 2,000 winners, as you say, he's been a punter's pal this season. You know, he steered home the Harfer, who unfortunately. We won't be seeing on a racetrack again, but it was a brilliant race in the Sussex Stakes. Jim Crowley was superb on him that day. But Bahash, obviously he's absolutely brilliant in his own right, but it's still a lot of pressure every time Jim gets a leg up on him. And yeah, as you say, he's been a real punter's pal.
Hopefully he'll be around for many more years to wow us in the saddle. Now, one jockey who has just done brilliantly in such a short space of time, although she has worked awfully hard at it, is Holly Doyle. And she was reaping the rewards of some brilliant connections she's built up over the last couple of years at Windsor on Saturday, when she had a five-timer, extra elusive, the Group 3 winner in the Winter Hill and Le Don de Vie in the listed August Stakes, plus wins aboard Indian Creek, Sir Mare and Mistress Nelly. And then on Sunday at Yarmouth, she rides a treble as well. I mean, this is a jockey in red-hot form. Keith, can you pinpoint what it is that sets her apart?
Yes, her brains. She's a really clever jockey.
And how has she been showing that, do you think?
Well, what she did at Windsor in terms of, you know, she knows when the ground's like it is, get the fresh ground up the rail. The way she won the time before her extra elusive at Haydock by taking the initiative in a race where there wasn't anything going to make the running. It's the best thing about our sport is that the horses are the athletes, so the testosterone doesn't come into it. The jockeys that make it don't do it with strength, they do it with the brains. And Holly Doyle is an extremely intelligent rider, and she'll be a top 10 jockey at the moment, no problem at all, because she thinks about the game more than most.
Mm. And she's going to get a Group 1 ride this weekend in that Sprint Cup. Aboard Glenshiel, isn't she? So that'll be fantastic to see. And as she proved on Saturday, she's now getting real group chances and real good horses to ride. But she has these excellent connections that, you know, that's hard work to build up with the likes of small trainers like William Stone, who she's done absolutely brilliant for, and many, many others. Jimmy, Holly Doyle for you, do you think she can keep this winning streak up?
Absolutely, yeah. It's amazing what confidence can do. I mean, she's just growing in stature by the day. As Keith said, she is a very clever jockey. She's getting very cute in how to ride a race now. Great judge of pace. She's always had lovely balance. So the talent's there, and now she's got the confidence, and she's got the connection. She's riding for lots of decent trainers now. There's no reason why the winners won't keep on coming.
Mm, indeed. And she is very strong in a finish as well, I think. You know, we're talking about her all as if she is just a jockey rather than being a female jockey. But of course, it is notable what she's achieved, given that, you know, that's never been done before by a woman. So
I think you've got to maybe look at it as well. Obviously, it remains to be seen what happens. She has got a retainer now. A young man who is making the waves she's making this year, I think, would be nailed on for a big retainership at the end of the season. And I think it maybe might show the sort of the last vestiges of the structural difficulties we're having in racing, and that, you know, she, to see how she gets on in terms of getting a really big job as time goes on, because she deserves one. There are lesser jockeys that have got big jobs than Holly Doyle now, to be honest with you, because she is so good. So we'll have to sort of see how that goes. What it was really shown about it is obviously she is the next step on from Hayley Turner, in the same way Hayley Turner was the next step on from your Gay Kellaways and all that. But what's really encouraging is that these steps are coming quicker and quicker.
The move
on to the next level for equality in terms of women jockeys has come a lot quicker than we might have expected. So, you know, it's all very encouraging.
It is. And you look at Hayley, I mean, obviously she rode the Sandringham winner, and then she rode it again this year. But Holly got her first Royal Ascot winner a lot quicker. Speaking of jockeys and retainerships, what about Kieran Fallon then for Qatar Racing? What do you make of that, Keith? Do you think that's a good move for him?
Definitely a good move for him. If I was him, my only sort of slight reservation is the man in the number one chair is not very old either. You know, it's if you had a 45, 50-year-old first jockey at Qatar, you might fancy your chances of getting into the big chair sooner. But Machine Murphy's not going anywhere. So, you know, it's just recognition that he is a jockey really on the up. It shows the, having Kieran Fallon is, because I believe he started late like his dad in terms of actually riding horses. But once the time came, and once he had got on horses, but no doubt that there would have been a lot more in the way of getting the right guidance, you know, through what his dad had built up. And similar sort of story with John Joneal Jr., who looks like he's been around horses all his life and is... He's arguably better than Kieran Fallon in equivalent terms. I think he's going to be one of the best jumps riders in the country very, very soon. You know, it's, in a sense, it's the opposite of Holly Doyle, but in another, you know, Fallon is earning the right at these good jobs. You know, he's ridden out his claim recently. I think Qatar are maybe, it's like snapping up a 17-year-old for 10 million as a footballer when you could be going for 50 by the time he's 19, sort of thing.
That's the thing, isn't it? They're assuring their future, aren't they? And they've got two excellent jockeys with Kieran Fallon, who's going to ride Oxted in the Sprint Cup on Saturday as well. Let's get on to the Saturday review then. Maybe not some sort of big Group 1 standout performances, but definitely some interesting angles to look into. Isabella Giles, let's talk about her winning the Prestige Stakes. Connections say the Rockfell could be next. Maybe we're looking at the 1,000 guineas next year for this daughter of Bilardo. Do you think she was flattered by the ground, Keith, or do you think that was a sort of accurate depiction of how good she actually is?
I think most of the big winners on Saturday were flattered by the ground, quite frankly, and she'd be one of them. Obviously, the favourite came up the near side, and that appeared not to be the place to be. So, you know, you've got to take what turned up against Isabella Giles there. She can only do what she did in the day, and that she was impressive in those terms, but you know, in terms of replication, and I'll probably sound like a broken record when I say the same about Century Dream and Subjectivist, is that, you know, you've got to look at those wins in the context of the ground on Saturday, which was really testing.
Okay. On that basis, you wouldn't fancy her for the Classics next year?
Not on what I've seen so far. I mean, she can show next time in the Rockfell what she's got. But in terms of if I'm looking at, as a punter, looking to back her up, to replicate that form, I would be reluctant about doing so if the ground wasn't soft.
Mm. Is it a great division, do you think, Jimmy, at the minute, these sort of miling fillies that we're looking at for next year? It still seems quite a muddied picture to me.
Yeah, I don't think that, I think I said this before, I don't think the juveniles, fillies or colts are really that great a bunch this year. I thought Isabella Giles was pretty impressive, but as Keith said, given the favour, it was disappointing. She probably didn't beat much. I do think she has a potential to make a nicer filly as she gets older. I love the way she finished out the race. I know the ground was pretty desperate and they were strung out, but she's clearly got the potential to stay further than 7 furlongs, maybe even stay further than a mile. And that will give her plenty of options once she reaches her classic year.
We talk about the juveniles division, how it's not great at the moment. I absolutely agree with that. My working theory up to now has always been it's weaker over the longer trips, the 7 furlong trip.
Yes, yeah.
Because those horses that would normally thrive over that trip at 2 haven't really been able to realise them, their ability yet. And I think that might still be the case. We'll get to
in
see.
Strain of thought, do you think therefore we'll see the real superstars come out later on in the season? Do you think that it's the COVID that's impacted this, or do you think it's just not a great crop?
I think it remains to be seen. I wouldn't be, you know, I'm not dismissing it yet as a poor crop. I think up to now what they've achieved has definitely been substandard, but there's obvious mitigation. So, you know, keep the case open, and you've got the Champagne Stakes coming up not too distant future. Often throws up a really good one over that sort of trip. So, yeah, they are still behind is what I think you've got to remember. And it makes things like Isabella Giles, who runs away with that race, does put an extra little asterisk beside the performance. You know, we do have to keep in mind that they are behind where they would normally be at this time of year.
Yeah.
And just view performances in that sort of context.
Mm. And Binners, I mean, I can't imagine you've got lots of people jumping tobacco for the 1,000 guineas off the back of that. But did you introduce her into your market?
Yeah, we put her in at 50-1, Maddie. I think Keith's right about his reservations. It's a bit early to say about crops yet. We've only been racing for 3 months now. So some of the yards probably didn't get going with their two-year-olds until they knew how the situation was going to unfold. But what you can say is well done to Clive Cox. He walked the ground before the meeting. He decided that the best ground was up the middle. She went up there under Adam Kirby and she skated away to win by 7 lengths. So Clive did a magnificent job. And, the favourite, Pomelo, she went down the stands rail. And it'll be interesting to see how she gets on next time, because it was a disappointing performance from her, given how she ran on her debut at Newbury. But there might be mitigation due to the differing ground.
Did anybody ask Cary Bentley politely why he decided to go that side?
I think he did it the previous day, and he actually rode a winner, didn't he? So he was clearly trying to repeat the feat.
He also said that the winner of the race before went up the stand side, and generally on heavy ground at Goodwood, horses do go over to the stand side. And as he and Rafe Beckett said afterwards, it's easy in hindsight, but
I just don't think she handled that ground at all. Could be wrong. Could well be right.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, what I did notice in her debut was though she had a relatively low action. Now I don't try and read too much into the action, was ground and all that, but it did clock with me when she won that first time. It was at Newbury, not Hero.
Mm.
And her action is quite low to the ground, and I don't know if that comes into it.
Yeah, to be honest, I wasn't convinced she'd necessarily handle the undulations with it just being a second start as well. But you can see the tactics. Anyway, let's move on to the St. Ledger then, because that's going to be the next port of call for Subjectivist. Now, Mark Johnson, he's run some good horses in the St. Ledger in the last couple of years. I mean, they weren't quite up to the standard of winning, but I think he run Naif Road and Sir Ron Priestley in it last year. And they're both the sort of horses that just really gamely stay on and outrun their odds. I'm not sure Subjectivist is going to be up to winning it, but he's the perfect type for the race, isn't he, Jimmy?
Well, I'm not sure he's classy enough for the St. Ledger, Mads, to be honest with you. He stays all day. That was obvious. I mean, he absolutely stretched them. They were finishing in kind of jumps distance intervals on Saturday. I was disappointed with Cabaletta. I thought she'd handled the ground better than she did. But I mean, it was a very good performance, laden with stamina from Subjectivist, but he would have to have conditions, I would think, very similar to that at Doncaster to be a factor. He surely wouldn't be classy enough against some of the favourites in that race.
Yes. Let's talk about the St. Ledger then, because I saw Galileo Chrome's win in the Yates Stakes this weekend, and I fell in love with this horse. Perhaps quite foolishly backed him for the English St. Ledger. Obviously, he's going to need to be supplemented for that. Maybe they'll opt to go for the Irish St. Ledger, but I think there was 22-1 available. I thought that was absolutely mad. So there's a bit of selfish input from me there on Galileo Chrome, but you'd think he'd be a better candidate than Subjectivist, maybe, Keith?
I would have said so. I think Galileo Chrome's going to get better the further he goes. Subjectivist, I would take evens. I don't know what figure he's been given for that run on Saturday, but I suspect he might never run to that high again. Whereas Galileo Chrome has a lot more potential.
Mm.
I thought he strides slow and long, get a hurdle in front of an IMO, to be honest with you. But he will definitely be, it was a mile 5 Saturday, a mile 6.5 is the least of what will really suit him. I think he'll be a cup horse potentially.
Yeah.
But I actually think the Ledger's really looking quite good this year because
really?
It might also be the COVID situation, you know, because it's the Derby came a bit soon. And by this point in the season, horses that have not quite done it at a mile and a half, they might be splintering off, they might be getting sold abroad, but they're all still here now this year with the St. Ledger. And, you know, the later developing ones that might have developed in time for the Derby didn't this year, but they have them for the Ledger. I really fancy Hookham for the Ledger. I think that's a really, really good horse. But, you know, I think we might end up with an above-average St. Ledger this year.
That's interesting, because I looked at it and I wasn't so sure it was as strong. But anyway, I'm starting the sort of bid. Everyone's got to hope that Galileo Chrome runs in the English St. Ledger for me, purely for me. Let's move on to talk about Century Dream, then, another horse who undoubtedly revelled in the soft conditions at Goodwood on Saturday, winning the Celebration Mile. James Doyle, I think he just absolutely bossed this race, but the horse was much the best in the conditions. I thought he was 16-1 for the QE2 immediately after the race. And I thought, given that he's likely to get soft ground there, that could look a bit of a big price. What do you think, Binners?
Yeah, if you get the soft ground at Ascot, which you're very likely to, 16-1 looks a fair enough price. He went clear over a furlong out under James Doyle and did it impressively, winning easily. Whether it was the ground that made him so good, I don't know. But as I said, it could well be the same at Ascot on Champions Day. If there was an unlucky horse in the race, possibly Regal Reality. He did win his maiden on soft ground, but his other three wins have come on good to firm ground. So I'd like to give him a chance somewhere else next time.
Yeah, we are speaking in the context of this ground producing, you know, more exaggerated performances. But I think Century Dream, when he gets a proper soft surface, I think he's an underestimated horse, Keith.
Well, his two big performances, the ones that stick out on his record, have both been on really testing ground. When he was third to Roaring Lion in the QE2, similar sort of idea. And in that context, that's why I would, you know, although the performance on Saturday is not something you'd want to see, you'd see replicated if he was in the Sussex or something, in the context of a QE2, when you can get that bad winter Ascot ground, could be totally different. Although we've already seen the Palace Pier can act on really testing ground, of course, when he won in France. So, you know, that works sort of against Century Dream. It is just another case, that race on Saturday, of the horse that handled conditions coming to the fore. And with in terms of replicating it, you have to be looking for similar conditions again. And it's lucky for Century Dream that that day might come when he does have the conditions right.
Indeed. Let's take a quick break now before we look back on some of Sunday's performances, including a horse who could be a bit of a dark one for the Arc.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Welcome back then to this Monday review postcast. Let's talk about Telecaster then, the horse I mentioned just before we went for that break. He was really impressive in the Grand Prix de Deauville over an extended a mile and a half. The Arc could be on his horizon now, according to trainer Huey Morrison. And this horse has always had so much talent, but it seems now he's really channeling it properly. And this was a great ride as well. Jimmy, would you be interested in him for a race like the Arc?
Well, I don't. I think his odds of what now being cut to about 33-1. I mean, I think there's a little bit of value there each way. I don't think he's good enough to win it. Maybe like a Group One in Germany or something would be where he could get that top level success. But I thought Telecaster was very impressive at the weekend. I mean, the horses behind him were no mugs. He got the fast pace he needed, settled nicely, and I've already won really well. I mean, don't forget, this is a horse who's beaten the likes of Too Darn Hot in Japan in his career. He was just a length off Lord North in the Brigadier Gerard at Haydock earlier in the season. So he's a classy horse. He's had a problem about settling in his races. He's a bit of a live wire. Probably he's just below Group One level anyway. But that was an impressive performance at Deauville, and he was very impressive in his previous run in France before that. So I'm surprised he's not a little shorter for the Arc, to be honest with you.
I'd agree with that. I'm not expecting him to be, you know, really, really short. But I think, as you say, he's got that back class. And if he can back up two runs in the same form, then we'd be looking at a very, very good horse. Keith, anything to add on Telecaster? Are you quite as positive as Jimmy?
Possibly not quite as. I am overwhelmingly, I like the horse. I always have. I think what I did notice on Saturday extra to the horse is it just keeps underlining what Soumillon's really good at, which isn't necessarily being the show pony, holding them up and presenting them late. He's actually really good at that in what he did on Telecaster the other day. It was just like watching Gaeth, wasn't it, in a little way, in terms of how he bossed the race from the front, which is what would put me off for the Arc, because he needs to maybe do that again. I think his best chance for a Group 1 hasn't passed him by, but you'd be very surprised if he ran on Sunday. That's the Grosse Prix von Baden, which was what Gaeth won last year by 14 lengths before he went to the Arc. I think a race like that, if you want to find a Group 1 for Telecaster, it probably is something like that. By all means, take your chance in the Arc. I think in the bigger field with better horses, he will struggle to fend them off. But keep him, bring him back next year, and I think you could plot this horse to a Group 1.
Yeah, let's hope he stays in training, because I do think there's more to come from him. Maybe it will be him on those German Group 1s. As you say, Hugh Morrison did say that could be his next port of call. Let's talk about an amazing story now then. Guy Mitchell riding The Game Is On, a 50-1 shot, the jockey with just one eye. He's 46. It was just his fourth ride. And just an incredible success that this was, and a remarkable story that a couple of years ago he was, you know, denied a license from when he was about 16, I think. I really enjoyed watching this coverage yesterday, and it just proves once again that racing is a game for anyone, depending on who you are. And this was absolutely fantastic. What did you think, Jimmy?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, no, and as you say, that's the great thing about racing. You don't have to be an absolute professional to win a horse race. You know, you can be an amateur jockey, and even if you know you haven't got the skills completely to you know ride at the very top level, you can still win any race. And that victory on the Game Is On for Guy Mitchell was absolutely fantastic. It was a real fairy tale for the sport.
And I think it was a great ride above a lot of things as well. Delivered him with a perfect challenge, and I thought it was so refreshing afterwards how he just said he was in utter disbelief and he was absolutely knackered. I think we could all relate to that one, but clearly it takes a lot of fitness to be able to ride in one race, so well done to him. Keith, any words to add? I just really loved that as a story.
Yeah, it was a lovely story, wasn't it? We've had horses with one eye winning races, and they usually have to go around the way that they've got the eye, don't they? Like the horse has only got a left eye, couldn't have won round Goodwood. Because they don't let them do it because of the
I'm not sure horse. That's quite the same when you're a jockey.
No, because you've not got your eyes on the side of your head for a start. But it's one of those. It's a lovely story, you know, and it's 50-1 shot as well. But you do these sort of stories do pop up now and again, don't they? We get him. We've had remember when Anthony Knott was a jockey before he was an owner. Sort of idea, and obviously you have the ongoing with David Maxwell. You know, he's just a guy who has his hobby.
Fantastic,
just a man with a hobby and a lot of money.
Yeah, right? Disney as well.
Yes,
yeah, absolutely. The Disney one, his one's probably the most remarkable to consider what he does. You know, that's probably the apex of all of them. But we do get a lot more of these than we probably deserve, and not deserve, but you'd expect us to get in racing, don't you?
Yeah, and hopefully wins like that, you know, other people who love racing but might have not thought it was possible. Well, it is possible now, and things are becoming even better for jockeys. So, yeah, congratulations to Guy Mitchell. Fantastic performance and wonderful story. And hopefully he can ride a few more winners for us. Any other eye catchers from the weekend? Any horses we want to advise people to add to their trackers? I mean, Happy Power, he won the Supreme Stakes, a race we've not even talked about yet. He'll be another one who may well be targeting the Prix de la Forêt. Great race that could be, with One Master, Safe Voyage, Space Blues, etc. Any horses who you think might have flown under the radar, Jimmy?
There wasn't many, but I was quite impressed by Indigo Girl in the first race at Yarmouth on Sunday. Again, I mean, how good a race that was, I'm not so sure. I mean, it was a two-year-old race. Not many had that much experience. But in the first time, but I mean, that clearly helped her settle better. And she did it very easily. She was quite green. But once she settled into her job in the final furlong, I thought she showed a good bit of speed. So John Gosden, filly Indigo Girl, be interesting to see how high she can go.
Okay, Keith, anything to add?
No, I took a really heavy interest in the chases at Perth this weekend. Nothing that immediately jumped out for the tracker, but you're starting to see better horses come out already over jumps, so I'm getting quite excited about that.
So am I, big time. Enjoyed this flat season. We've still got some great racing, but great to see Perth putting on a really, you know, a lot of money on that card as well up for grabs. So in this current climate, that has to be applauded. And, you know, the trainers and jockeys who made the effort to go up there have been rewarded. Let's take another break now, but we have Enable Chat just after this. She's going to run in the September Stakes this weekend in her prep for a third arc. And also we have the Group 1 Sprint Cup at Haydock. Don't go anywhere.
Here at Paddy Power, we're the home of the Money Back Special with some incredible offers every single week. Check out the website or app today. Terms and conditions apply. 18+ begambleaware.org.
Welcome back then to the Monday Postcast. We're now going to preview some of this weekend's big races, and they don't get much bigger than Enable. She's running in the September Stakes, the race she won a couple of years ago before winning the ARC. And Prince of Arran arguably set to be her biggest contender, but it should be a fairly easy prep, shouldn't it, Keith?
Yeah, you would have thought so. You know, everybody, the thing is, everybody's known for about 3 weeks that Enable is running in the September Stakes and have planned around that. So anybody who's entered has done so knowing that taking on Enable is the default position. So,
there is an interesting one in there, though, isn't there? It's surprising that they've put left Logician in.
They have left Logician in. My working assumption might be wrong. I don't know anything. But that's in case Enable steps on a stone or something, I assume. Because I don't think both of those horses will run. I'd be very surprised.
No.
So I think it's a contingency rather than anything else.
Exciting he's on the way back, though, isn't he?
Well, it would be. He looked a very exciting horse last year. It's the good news is that we are going to get to see an exciting, or certainly interesting, Dunmont runner in that race on Saturday.
Do you think she should have prepped in a different race, Keith? What are you in favour of her going for this sort of easier option, or do you think she should have run in the Yorkshire Oaks?
It's the easy option to get her prepared for the ARC, and you know they've been quite upfront about the ARC being the be all and end all this season with a 6-year-old mare. I can see why that is a legitimate point of view. You know, if Enable had been 4, I would have come out and explicitly said, I'm disappointed they didn't run in the Yorkshire Oaks. But, you know, she is 6 now. She's been brought back expressly to win the ARC. So even though I'd rather have seen her take on Love, of course I would as a fan. But, you know, given in her unique position, I can see why they've done it this way. I wish it weren't so. But, you know, we're gonna get to see her at least. It's not going to be a racecourse gallop, which it would have been an even worse outcome. I wouldn't normally be in favour of this approach, but in these specific circumstances, you know, you can see why.
And it worked awfully well in 2018, didn't it? Jimmy, what would you be looking for from Enable if she runs in this September Stakes? What exactly are you looking to see? Because I think we're all expecting her to win, but how would you like her to do it?
Well, you'd obviously hope that she wins fairly easily. I think the important thing is, you know, just that the race goes smoothly for her and that it gets her absolutely ready for the ARC. 2 years ago when she ran in it, she was having her first run back, and I think she was up against Crystal Ocean, wasn't she? So there was actually a bit of a question mark whether she would actually win the race, but she was very impressive indeed. And look, things have gone very smoothly for her so far. I mean, obviously, she didn't have to beat much in the end in the King George, but she did it nicely. She looked as good as ever. You just hope for something similar at Kempton. We know she's not going to be cherry ripe. The big day is the ARC, and let's just hope that goes all smoothly. So she's A1 when it comes to Longchamp in October.
Yeah, exactly that. Binners, I can't imagine many of your punters will be wanting to back Enable at prohibitive odds on the weekend, but... are you sort of hopeful that she can do it easily? Do you think she can win the ARC as well?
Well, Maddie, I did suggest a few weeks ago that if I was Aidan O'Brien or Godolphin, I might put in a really good horse against Enable in this race just to keep her up to her work. The one thing I wasn't expecting was John Gosden to put that good horse in there. But I suspect, as Keith said, they probably won't run against each other. It's a precautionary measure. Logician apparently has been working well on the Newmarket Gallops, according to David Milne. So we look forward to him coming back. I'm a bit disappointed about the September Stakes looking at this field. I think she'll win it very easily. And you're right, she did win this race a couple of years ago, but that was a bloody good trial for the ARC, that one, Maddie. Crystal Ocean and her had very little between themselves on official ratings. I thought Crystal Ocean might throw it up to Enable as she was coming back that day, and she was awesome. And unfortunately, like you say, from the punting point of view, she's going to go off at a very, very short price, and you'd be amazed if any of these other contenders could top her on Saturday.
Before we move on, Keith, do you think they're going to take it softly with Logician this year and then build him up to a proper campaign last year? It sounds like it's been a very serious issue for him. Those are the vibes I'm getting. Do you think I'm right?
You'd be hearing more about that sort of thing than me, to be honest.
What do you think they should do? Do you think they should aim high and run him in races like the Ark?
Well, they've got an Eagle and they can take their time with Logician and run him next year. It's not like a St. Ledger winner is going to be covering June Mont's best mares, is it? They can afford to wait another year for him. It's stud. And they've got an Eagle running just now. Why not? Just leave him. Yeah. Just keep him, take it nice and easy this year. Win what you can. And then just kick on at five and try and win everything at five.
Jimmy?
I was just going to say, if they could go to America, that would probably be the aim for this season. There's not much else that would suit him with an Able in the Ark. But, if that was possible, then that would be a race for him. But not sure if it is it?
One race that is going to be very interesting this weekend is the Betfair Sprint Cup. Group 1 over 6 furlongs, obviously. And I'll run you through the field at this latest stage. We have Archer's Dream, Art Power, Brando, Dream of Dreams, Forever in Dreams, Glen Shiel, Golden Horde, Hello Yumzane, last year's winner, Cardem, Lopi Fernandez, Oxted, Queen Jojo, Summergan, Tabdeed, and the Tin Man. I was expecting quite a little bit less to be entered up at this stage, so I'm pleasantly surprised. How many do we think are going to stand their ground? I mean, Oxted Connections, they've voiced their concerns about the ground. He's obviously by Mason, a horse whose progeny have handled it, but they're definitely going to run. Do you think he can confirm that July Cup form, Jimmy?
I have to say, I prefer Hello Yumzane to turn the form around, Mads. I think he's very good round Haydock. Two of his top four Racing Post ratings for his two wins at Haydock have come at the course. When he won very quite impressively both times, including this race last year. I mean, it's sure to be on the soft side at Haydock. I mean, it always is in September. We've had a lot of rain recently. That should suit him. He's tough as nails, super consistent, and I'd make him favourite.
Okay. Keith, how do you analyse the race? I don't think there's that much between a lot of these, is there?
Well, there never is with sprinters, really, is there? There is because the margins are so fine, a lot of them can beat one another on a given day, unless you've got a Batash, who obviously won't even venture as far as six. The going's currently soft. It's not forecast to be a particularly dry week. I'm basically trying desperately to find a reason to put up Cadem, but his record on soft is so poor. Back him with, I think on form, he's about 14-1. And I think he might win one of these big Group 1 sprints one day.
Surely he needs the ground, though. Ever since he ran in a couple of these soft ground races last year, and I just think he hates the soft.
Totally, yeah, he totally bombed. And I'm not a massive ground punter, but when it gets to extremes and a horse has blobbed for no reason on those conditions, I would have to see further evidence before I go back in. It might not be as testing as it sometimes can be for a sprint cup. Whether that's enough to get me to back Cadem, I don't really know. But you're right to say that these are sprinters on a very sort of similar level to one another, and that you could be well to take a punt on one at a bit of a price. It's Lopia Fernandez is an interesting entrant. I think he does need seven, but he is his horse with a bit of speed, and it will depend on how much rain we get during the week. I would just keep an eye on it, because Jimmy said what I had thought until 20 minutes ago. You assume it's going to be soft at Haydock in September. It might not always be so, and this year it might not be as testing as we might be used to. Just keep an eye on that, because I would imagine that for most punters, how the ground comes up, given it's Haydock and given the time of year, is going to have an effect on how they approach this race. So just keep an eye out.
Certainly. You mentioned Lopi Fernandez. He's one of the three-year-olds in there. Golden Horde, the Commonwealth Cup winner, another, and Art Power as well. What do you make of those two? Because Art Power was so disappointing in the Nunthorpe. We reviewed it on this show, didn't we, Keith? And I said I was a big fan of him. Could you see him bouncing back in a race like this, or is it going to be a bit of a big ask?
I don't know what to make of the Nunthorpe. I mean, it was a total, blob, and you could just chuck it out. But I don't know. He was never going the pace at all.
No.
They were definitely, Keith, didn't you think, favoured on that stand side rail in the Nunn for the wind pushing them that way.
He was beat after a furlong though.
Muddling.
There was something not, whether it was a culture shock of Group 1 5 furlong pace or something, I don't know. I'd be surprised if it was that, to be honest. But I don't know what the issue was there. You know, his big fans could take a chance there. I think he is a fast horse. I don't think he wants, you know, the sort of testing ground 6 furlongs that the Sprint Cup normally provides.
Mm.
On talent, he's a big price at 10s.
Yeah.
I still think that...
Imagine Cesar Account.
I'd still be of the view that, you know, he's a speedier horse than that. But, you know, I think on talent, he is a big price.
Okay, Finn, I'm going to bring a few more into the equation in a minute because it could be potentially quite a deep race. But have you got any updated betting for us, or are we still waiting on that?
No, I have indeed, Maddie. It looks a really exciting race. I'm looking forward to this one. Oxted heads the market at 7-2. Not much between them, as you guys have already said. Dream of Dreams at 4-1, together with Haydock specialist Hello Yume Zane. 6-1, Golden Horde. Lope E. Fernandez, 8-1 Art Power, and it's 10-1 the rest.
Dream of Dreams, then. I wasn't convinced he'd go on the soft ground last time in the Hungerford, and my word, he proved me emphatically wrong. Do you think he can do something similar, Jimmy, this time around?
To be honest with you, Mads, I wouldn't be dropping him back in distance after his performance at Haydock. Newbury, wasn't it? Because I've just thought over the 7 furlongs, he just looks so comfortable. He's settled. I mean, I don't think he would have done that a year ago. I think he's, you know, a typical Sir Michael Stout older horse. He's finally getting the hang of things. And Ascot, I mean, he was another stride he would have won. But up until that point, I mean, he was really struggling to get to the leaders. So I think Haydock's a sharper 6 furlongs than Ascot. I know it'll be softish ground, but I wouldn't have thought that would be his cup of tea now. I would have thought he needed a furlong further.
Mm. And breathtaking. Look, who was in second, 7 lengths behind him. She advertised that form winning a group race in France this weekend. What about the other Hamden Al-Maktoum runner then, Tab Deed, Keith? A bit of an unknown quantity. Owen Burroughs, he tends to bring these horses along slowly in the same way Sir Michael Stout does. Would you be hopeful that this horse has enough at this level? Obviously, he had that second first time out this season behind Glenshiel, who's also going to run, and is that big race ride for Holly Doyle?
Yeah, it's had Tab Deed that went over the Tin Man last time and shined so bright. You know, if you believe it, which there's no reason you shouldn't, he deserves to be sort of right in there. He is sort of 10-1-ish, and you know, that looks to be his price. He is one of these horses that might go unnoticed a little bit sort of like Oxted did before the July Cup, really. And you know, we see all these sprinters are much of a muchness and naturally gravitate towards the horses we've seen run against one another before. Your Hello Yume Zanes, your Dream of Dreams. A newcomer like Tab Deed sometimes, or Oxted, does have the capacity to go past them. I wouldn't say I have a particularly strong view on Tab Deed, to be perfectly honest with you, but I just know that his level of form is what you would need it to be to have him at 10-1-ish for the Sprint Cup.
Okay, let's confirm those selections then. Binners, who would you be backing if they all turned up?
Well, I disagree. I'm going to go for Dream of Dreams. Tremendously impressive in the Hungerford. He's second in the Diamond Jubilee the last 2 years, so he deserves to win a big one. Good soft ground at Newbury when he won last time, but he has won on soft ground at Doncaster, and it would be a lovely fillip for Sir Michael Stout.
Yep, okay, Jimmy.
Oh, hello, Yume Zane for me. But don't rule out the horse who finished second to him 12 months ago, the Tin Man. I know he's getting a bit long in the tooth. He hasn't really done much this season, beaten by Tab Deed at Newbury. But James Fanshawe's horses, they always come right in the autumn. And the Tin Man's got a pretty good record in this race. So I could see him running well at a big price.
Do you know what? That's exactly what I was going to say. I know he's getting on, but I think that was a pretty good run last time, actually. He ran up to form just behind Tab Deed. And as you say, James Fanshawe, he won that Group 1 in France, the Romane, wasn't it, a couple of weekends ago.
Yeah,
so his horses are clearly flying And as much as there's a lot of young talent in the field, I think the old boys, he's still certainly capable, and he does perform at Haydock on soft ground, which is exactly what you want. Keith, go on then, finalise your selection.
Not until Saturday morning, I'm afraid. How can I have a go at a horse on Monday? I'll be back. I will be hoping it dries out. There's a dry week and we get something approaching good ground, because then I'd back Cadden.
There you go. You've bended to us eventually. Right then, that's all we've got time for on today's show. Hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Very, very pleasant couple of minutes reviewing the weekend and looking ahead to this weekend. As usual, Bruce and the team will be back on Friday. So if you're like Keith and you're wanting to wait a little bit longer before firming up your selections for the big race, then make sure you tune into that. Have a wonderful week and best of luck with wherever you're betting.
Paddy Power Games has over 250 of your favourites to play online. And we're going to attempt to name them all in this 10-second ad before the T's and C's kick in. There's Blackjack, 18+, bgambleaware.org.